Baseball Tonight is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Way out of here. Oh,
this is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, April 12th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Tim Kirkchen, and I'm filling in for a traveling Buster Olney. I'm in a hotel here in Bristol, Connecticut. Okay, before we get to Buster, it was a big weekend in baseball, especially a big weekend for the Padres. On Friday, Joe Musgrove threw a no-hitter against the Rangers. He struck out 10. He allowed one base runner, a hit-by-pitch in the fourth inning, and that snapped the Padres' streak of regular season games without a no-hitter at 8,206. And here's what it sounded like.
No balls in one strike. The big right-hander ready and delivers. Swing and a ground ball to shortstop. Kim has it. Friendly hop. Throw to first. That is a no-hitter, and that is history. Joe Musgrove with the first no-hitter in Padre history. April 9th, 2021 at Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas. The kid comes home, and he gets it done.
So awesome. Couldn't have picked a better individual for this to actually happen to.
So here's Joe Musgrove after throwing the no-hitter.
I didn't feel very good in warm-ups at all. I think I slept kind of weird last night. I felt kind of tight, and I told Vic, I said, let's stick with the game plan, and we'll just adjust as we need to go. And next thing I know, I look up, I'm in the sixth, and I got no hits. And, that's when it really starts setting in. You're coming up on the 100-pitch mark, and your body's starting to feel it, but, the fact that you haven't given up a hit kind of gives you that added adrenaline to get through those last three innings.
In other news, the Dodgers manager, Dave Roberts, is concerned that Trevor Bauer is being, quote, singled out by the MLB about apparently putting something illegal on a baseball. Also in Southern California, Angels outfielder Dexter Fowler will be out for the season with a torn ACL. Prospects Joe Adell and Brandon Marsh are likely going to have to fill in for Fowler. Tough break for the Angels. And the Tigers place Miguel Cabrera on the 10-day IL with a strain of his left biceps. In really big news, Alex Rodriguez is part of a group that is finalizing a $1.5 billion deal to buy the Timberwolves. A baseball analyst, former player, soon to be the owner of an NBA team. And let's get to the good stuff. Zach McKinstry of the Dodgers hit a two-run homer to lead them to a 3-0 win over the Nationals.
There's a fly ball to right center field. That one is well hit, and it is gone! A home run! The Zach attack! Zach McKinstry! He's knocked in all three today. A double and a home run.
Manny Machado hit a solo home run to lead the Padres to a second shutout in 3 days, 2-0 over the Rangers.
2-2. Pitch to Machado. He's in the air deep to left field. Way back. Gonna go. Second deck to straightaway left. Boy, Ian Kennedy kept challenging Manny Machado, and eventually Manny straightened one out. Second home run of the day for the Padres. Grisham in the fourth, Machado in the ninth, 2-0 San Diego.
And Andrew Benintendi of the Royals had a fielder's choice RBI. It was the difference in the Royals' 4-3 win over the White Sox.
He's going to square the bunt. He's going to drag about right side of the pitcher. He throws home. He gets away from the catcher. Taylor scores, and the Royals take the lead here in the 10th inning.
And Rougned Odor, playing without a beard for the first time, I didn't even recognize him. His own daughter said, Dad, I don't like the way you look this way without your beard. But Odor provided the clutch hit Sunday. And here is that clutch hit from Rougned Odor.
3-2. That one is looped into center field. That is going to be in there for a base hit in front of Phillips. Scoring is Hicks. And a big RBI single for Odor, and the Yankees take a 5-4 lead as Torres moves to third.
And here's Aaron Boone talking about that.
I just really love the compete today with the guys, and I thought, even though we hadn't gotten that big hit or, you know, that backbreaker to break a game open. I thought we were in the fight up and down the order all game long. And then, you know, just a great at bat by Ruby there to keep battling, to fight one off, and then to add some important add-on runs, you know, when obviously we're depleted in the bullpen today. Just some really good finishing at bats and winning at bats there at the end. So great job by the guys.
But the big news came in Atlanta Sunday night. That was a nutty game, a bunch of home runs. Bryce Harper, Freddie Freeman, who now is a homer in three straight games, and Ronald Acuna Jr., who went 9-for-13 over the weekend. But the big story of that game was the game was tied 6-6 in the ninth, and then this play happened.
And the next pitch swung on, popped up, shallow left field. Ozuna coming in to make the catch. Boehm is coming home. The throw not in time. D'Arnaud had it on a bounce and tried to lunge at Boehm for the tag, but Boehm in just ahead of it as the Phillies have taken a 7-6 lead.
Braves manager Brian Snitker asked for a replay, and the replay center indicated there was not enough evidence to overturn the call, and a lot of people around baseball disagreed with that. Here's Brian Snitker.
That's why. I mean, I saw we had an angle that I saw he didn't have, because I wondered till I saw a certain angle, and I was confirmed my what I thought, that he didn't touch the plate. I don't know. I mean, it's frustrating sometimes, I guess, and that's what I told the umpires. Because I got a view on the big screen that he didn't touch the plate. So
baseball is back, and so are your favorite teams and players. Catch the best of the bigs all season on ESPN Plus, with more than 170 live MLB games featuring every star and every team in the league. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/baseball. And the fantasy baseball season is underway. That means fantasy-focused baseball with Eric Carabel and Tristan Cockcroft is a must-listen for all fantasy baseball players. You can listen to fantasy-focused baseball wherever you get your podcasts.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Your flight to Bristol has been delayed once again. For your entertainment purposes, please listen to the Baggage Claim Monday edition of the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney. The White Zone is for immediate unloading and loading of passengers.
Okay, Buster, it's Tim here. Tell me what the Atlanta airport looks like this morning.
I'm telling you, I think that the whole city must have been up in arms about that call last night in the Braves game, because I cannot find a place to have a conversation with you without seeing like six people sleeping. Like, I think this call kept everybody up all night last night, because everywhere I go, there's someone asleep.
Okay, well, let's get right to the call, Buster. I watched it live, and it seemed from a great distance that Alec Bohm never touched the plate and was tagged out on that play, and yet they went to replay and determined that Alec Bohm was safe at home, even though it was clear to me that he never touched the plate. You were there, Buster. What did you see?
It was interesting, too, because when I first saw the play, at first glance, I was like, oh, Bohm beat the ball to home plate. And even Darnot's reaction, I think that he thought that Bohm was safe. And so I figured that was going to be the case. And then the Braves, in a close game, and then late in the game, you knew that they were going to challenge because they have nothing to lose at that point. And as we were watching replays, and you see the way that Bohm's front foot bounced basically around the plate, you're like, okay, well, he didn't touch home, and the replay is going to go against the Phillies, and we're going to go into the bottom of the ninth inning. And I was watching the Braves players, and the first time they showed the replay on the scoreboard at Truist Park, all the Braves infielders began to walk off the field like, okay, well, he's out. There's no question about that. Freddie Freeman and Albies and Austin Riley are, you know, at the first base foul line waiting for the umpires to make that call official. And then they kept on watching. And then you began to wonder, they can't possibly indicate that he was safe, right? They can't possibly go that way. And they did. And the Braves went absolutely crazy. I was watching Will Smith, who was a pitcher for the Braves in this situation. He was screaming at the home plate umpire, awful, awful. And boy, he was right.
Right. So, Buster, what does this tell us about replay, that we had every camera angle in the world to look at this, and they still did not reverse that call? Where are we on replay when it seems clear from replay that that should have been overturned and it wasn't? So what does that mean?
Yeah, on social media today, last night, a lot of people were saying get rid of replay. Even, I think, Travis Darnot, after the game, talked about how this undercuts his confidence in it. I disagree with that. I think for the most part, replay is good. You get more calls right that should, as opposed to having them wrong. And I think that's a good thing. But then you have moments like last night where you wonder what in the heck people at the replay center in Chelsea were watching. And in fact, today, I think it's important, Tim, today, that Major League Baseball come out with a statement saying that replay decision last night was wrong. Because there is no indication, I think you'll agree with me, Alec Bohm ever touched home plate.
Yeah, and again, let's go back a couple more days to when Michael Conforto of the Mets leaned into a pitch. He not only did he not try to get out of the way of a pitch, which you're by rules supposed to do, the pitch was called a strike, and he got hit by a pitch that was, for a split second, called a strike. And Ron Culpo, who's a good umpire, acknowledged after the game that he missed the call. He was the home plate umpire, and he called it a hit batter and allowed a run to score. But that play was not reviewable. So, again, getting back to replay, how can that not be a reviewable play? If we're trying to get everything right here, we're not. So what should we do about this?
Well, I think that they need to make adjustments when they can, or when mistakes are made, to acknowledge that, to, I think, bolster the credibility of the system and to have people believe them. When you have someone like Mike Trout coming out on social media last night and effectively questioning what happened, that's not a good thing for Major League Baseball. Now, my own on that Conforto play, what I talked about last week was that great rule 801C, which basically says, and I'm paraphrasing here, any situation not covered in the rule book is left to the discretion of the umpires. What was unusual about that Conforto play was the fact that Culpa already called it a strike. In retrospect, I was thinking, you know what? That would have been a good opportunity for them to go, okay, this is an unprecedented situation. The umpire called the strike. It was a hit by pitch. Get the umpires together and get it right. The crazy thing about last night was, and I don't blame the umpires there for not getting the call right. It's a bang-bang play. It's incredibly swift. We got to watch on replay, replays of it 20 different angles in 20 different ways before we determined for sure what happened. But they got to get it right. And when they screw up, they got to say it. I love it when the NFL does that, when the NFL comes out and says this call was botched. I love it when the NBA does that. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think it would be good to hear from Major League Baseball about this, because, again, in live time, I thought he was safe. But in replay, it looked like he was out. And we move on from there. All right, we need to switch gears here. We need to go to the Freddie Freeman documentary that you did, Buster. That was remarkable on every level. Just tell me what it was like doing the Freddie Freeman story that you did.
It was really one of the best experiences I've had since working at ESPN, because as I talked about last week on the podcast, I mean, Freddie, his wife Chelsea, his brothers, his dad, they all work so hard through these interviews in talking about these painful moments they've had in their life. And Chelsea, you know, was so detailed in talking about the fertility issues that she and Freddie had for a couple of years. And it was very interesting, because when I first brought up the idea of doing this documentary on Freddie, you know, you figured he was going to win the MVP and he was going to be a big name. And he probably was the biggest name in professional sports in the United States last year that got coronavirus that night where this temperature spiked 104.5. And the initial response I got back was, well, Freddie doesn't really like talking that in depth about himself. And I think you would agree with me. He's one of the nicest people ever. When you and I go to the ballpark, he's accessible all the time. He'll talk about what's going on in the field. But I had never seen or heard him talk about at length about his mother. And it was absolutely wrenching to hear his pain. But he made up his mind he was going to get through with Tim.
Yeah, you know, I've talked to him about his mother more than once, and I used a bunch of the stuff during a game once, and he was remarkable talking about all the things that he does now for his mom as a tribute. She died of melanoma, as you know, so he wears long sleeves for every game to make sure his body is covered from the sun as a tribute to his mother. But I've never seen him as emotional as he got with you. I mean, Buster, you've interviewed a lot of people in your life. The emotion he showed, I assume you've never seen anything like that from someone you were sitting, you know, across the table from, correct?
Well, we did that one because, you know, COVID year, I wound up doing that one on Zoom. And when I went into the interview, I didn't really know what to expect from Freddie. But as I talked to him, he interjected, as we began to talk about his mom, he began to get emotional. He said, you know, I want to talk to her and I want to, you know, honor her. And when he said that, most of the time I would ask a question and then he would pause and he would break down and then he would collect himself and then he would give more details and then he would pause and he would collect himself and he would break down and he'd give more detail. It was just this, it wound up as I wrote in the piece over the weekend. It was supposed to be a 90-minute interview. It went on for 4 hours. And at the very end of it, he held up, looked into the camera and looked at me and said, hey, check this out. He was totally worn out. He was waterlogged. And he had that great self-deprecating smile. And he held up the box of tissues and it was completely empty from that four-hour interview. I've done a lot of interviews, but I've never seen someone who just made up his mind that I am going to get through every detail, every memory that I have, no matter how painful.
Right. And again, I think that was not just a tribute to his mom, but to everyone else who's been through something like that. And he just wanted to protect people so they never had to go through that again. And all the fertility stuff, so people who've been through it can understand that he's been through it also. I think he was just trying to help people with all that. Just another really great attribute about Freddie Freeman. All right, let's switch gears again. The Padres had a great weekend. Joe Musgrove on Friday night threw the first no-hitter in the history of the Padres. They've gone 8,205 games without one. Just a little context, the Dodgers have 26 no-hitters. The Padres now have one. Granted, the Dodgers have been around much longer, but since the Padres came into existence, 1969, there had been 140 no-hitters thrown, none by the Padres, nine by the Dodgers, and now they finally got one by Joe Musgrove, who grew up outside of San Diego. The Padres were his team. He gets traded there, and then he throws a no-hitter. I mean, how do you read this whole Joe Musgrove no-hitter situation?
Tim, I don't believe in hexes and jinxes and all that stuff, but I got to tell you, I can remember almost 30 years ago having conversations with Tony Gwynn when I covered the Padres for the San Diego Union Tribune about the fact that the Padres didn't have a no-hitter and they had repeatedly gone to the ninth inning, you know, gone down to the wire, gone to the last out, and it hadn't happened. It had always fallen apart. Something would happen to prevent that. And it was one of those ones where you're like, boy, I don't know if they're ever going to get one. And you're right. It's so cool that Joe Musgrove, a San Diego kid who grew up going to the ballpark and watching guys like Jake Peavy wind up getting the no-hitter. And it's interesting because when you look at the back of, you know, his baseball card, so to speak, I think a lot of people are like, boy, that's the surprise that Joe Musgrove did it. I totally disagree. I thought that the last couple of years we'd seen so many signs that this was a guy who was absolutely ready to break out. Electric stuff. He was putting it all together. You know, there was a reason why the Pirates wanted him included in that Garrett Cole trade because they believed in the guy's talent. And you could see that. And the other thing too that I love, what a great guy. Like, I was really happy for Joe as one of the good people in baseball.
Yeah, he's really funny and he's really smart. And he's also got a 31 inning scoreless streak now dating back to last year. And, you know, good for the Padres for recognizing this guy is on the way up, and he most certainly is. Now we just got to get the Marlins to hit for the cycle. The Marlins have never had a cycle in their history. So now that we've got the Padres off the books, we got someone for the Marlins to hit for the cycle, and then we'll take that off the books also. Okay, switching gears again, Buster. The Red Sox started out 0-3, looked terrible that first weekend against the Orioles, first week against the Orioles, and now they're 6-3, and JD Martinez is off to an incredible start. He's hitting .472. He's got an RBI in 7 straight games. He has played 8 games, has had an extra base hit in all 8 games that he's played, which ties a record to start a season with Sandy Alomar Jr. and Alex Rodriguez. And he's now the 6th player to have a 3-homer game for 3 different teams. So what do you make of the terrible weekend that the Red Sox started with and now where they are now?
Then maybe I should have believed Alex Cora all through the winter and all through spring training. When I would text with him and ask about the team, he kept on saying, we're going to be okay. We're going to be good. We're going to be better than what people think. And I was texting with him yesterday morning about the team. He just loves, Tim, the versatility of this group. He loves the experience of the group. He loved the idea that you got a Kike Hernandez and Marwin Gonzalez who on a daily basis, they don't care where they play. And I texted him that when you think of, you know, Marwin and you think of Kike and you think of Xander Bogaerts, that looks like a really fun group. And there's no pressure on these guys. Like, you know, I wrote them off in spring training. I don't think they have enough pitching. I still have questions about that. I still think that over the course of the regular season, the Yankees are the better team. And you could just, you know, in the quotes that J.D. Martinez and others gave to reporters after yesterday's win, it's pretty clear they love being the underdog.
Yeah, it's been a long time for them. We talked about them being sneaky good entering the season, and now with the AL East moving around a little bit, I'm not sold on their pitching either, but Alex joked with me on the phone the other day, and he was kidding. He said, look, he said, don't, this is right before the season, he said, don't count out the Red Sox. We stink now, but we're getting better. He was kidding, but he wasn't kidding. And right now they're playing awfully well. And of course, Buster, so are the Dodgers. They just swept the Nationals over the weekend without Cody Bellinger, without Mookie Betts. What do you see when you look at the Dodgers so far?
So if we missed on the Red Sox in assessing them, and time will tell that, the Dodgers, to quote Dennis Green, they are who we thought they were. Like, this is an unbelievable team. They are playing so well, and their depth is manifesting early, whether it's the depth in the pitching staff or how about, as you say, not having Bellinger, not having Betts, and Justin Turner's out of the gate hitting, you know, around .400 with a slugging percentage of close to .700. There's always someone who steps up. Now, and it's amazing to me how every year it seems like you hear about a guy on their roster and you're like, who's that guy? And then you hear that, well, he was like a 4th-round pick or 5th-round pick in 2016. but he has developed in the minor league system. And lo and behold, they got a really good major league player. The Dodgers, you know, yeah, they have a lot of money and they can spend it on a guy like Trevor Bauer, or they can pay Mookie Betts in a way that other teams can't. But I think you would agree with me that the backbone of this team success in recent years has been the unbelievable ability to draft and develop players.
Right. And Zach McKinstry is one of those guys who has stepped in here with a couple guys hurt in the outfield and has had a really nice last week. Very, very productive. Now, speaking of Trevor Bauer, Buster, a story developed over there recently that baseballs have been taken from Trevor Bauer's starts, and some of them had some stickiness to them and marks on them, and Major League Baseball is going to check them out. Now, it's clear baseballs are being taken out of starts and innings from pitchers all across the game as baseball tries to crack down and make sure nobody is using any sort of illegal substance on a baseball. Now, how they're going to police this, I don't know. But what did you make of baseball, you know, kind of singling out to some degree Trevor Bauer? And that's what Dave Roberts, his manager, says. It's not fair to single anybody out. How do you read that whole situation?
Tim, I totally agree. And what I talked about on the podcast at the end of last week was the fact that, you know, for example, the story that came out in The Athletic was that baseballs were collected and there were substances, sticky stuff found to be on the baseball. And my question was, and what drives me crazy, is that it feels like there's this shadow war going on for Major League Baseball where they're trying to intimidate pitchers into being clean. They're trying to, you know, threaten them like ineffective parents do all the time. When I think they should just look, you've got the rule on the books. Tell the umpires to enforce it. If the balls were collected last week because there was sticky stuff on it, why aren't the umpires going out and checking Trevor Bauer? Go check him. You get some evidence? Go check him. But the idea that you're going to leak it out, and I don't know who did that. You know, there's several candidates. But the idea that you would leak it out to try to scare Trevor Bauer straight is ridiculous. And I think you would agree with me. Boy, I'd love to be the lawyer to make that chain of custody argument on behalf of Trevor Bauer if there's something found on a baseball, considering all the people are handling a ball. And believe me, I mean, you and I are not naive about what might have taken place, but the way they're doing it is ridiculous. Hit it head on and enforce your rules or shut up.
Yeah, I agree. And you're right about the chain of custody. I mean, I've had a major league manager tell me for years that every catcher in the big leagues has some sort of, you know, substance on his catching gear, on his shin guard. So if he wants to load up a ball with something sticky, he just catches it, rubs it up against his shin guard and throws it back to the pitcher. And Eduardo Perez, our good buddy, told me a couple weeks ago, he said, you know, when the catcher comes to the mound and the pitcher puts his hand on the catcher's shoulder, sometimes the catcher has something sticky on his jersey and the pitcher is getting the stickiness on his finger just by tapping his catcher on the shoulder. So there are all sorts of ways to do this. And yes, it's going to be difficult to police, but let's do some checking and see where it goes from there. We had another pitcher, Buster, that was upset yesterday, and that was Marcus Stroman of the Mets. They started a game in the rain at Citi Field, and two batters into the game had to be postponed because of rain. And Stroman, who started the game and faced the two batters, was upset, and he said this was not smart to start this game. Now, let's understand, Buster, it's the Mets' decision to start the game. This is not Major League Baseball's decision. This is not the umpire's decision. The Mets made the decision. And then, you know, Stroman was pretty outspoken. He was upset about it. Did he have a right to be? And is that the way he should have approached it?
I don't think so. I think there are a lot of ways to handle it. And look, you know, I mean, predicting the weather is always a rough science, but that was unusual to see a situation where you had a deluge. You know, it's not like there was a little sprinkles and then they halted the game for a few minutes and then went back out there and finished. An absolute deluge. Whatever weather service the Mets are using, they should change it. You know, I always love those stories from the Yankees people. I don't know if you know this, but their primary weather and source of weather information is actually Hal Steinbrenner, their owner, who is a pilot. And of course, the Angels, whenever there's a weather situation, always turn to Mike Trout, baseball's resident weatherman.
So good. Okay, Buster, you're flying home today in a few minutes. Is that correct?
I'm flying home today, and I will see you on Wednesday because you and I are getting our second shot. Pretty exciting.
Yes, second shot on Wednesday. Then I will be driving 6 hours home after that, but being totally vaccinated on Wednesday. I'm very excited about that thought, and I can't wait. So you travel safely today, and I'll see you on Wednesday.
That sounds great. And I thought of you yesterday as I was sitting in my position next to the Phillies dugout. I had Phillies players, coaches coming over and saying, it's great to see you. Tim, you're gonna have like a circle of people run up to you when you get back to a ballpark.
Yeah, well, just tell me when that's gonna be, Buster, because I love doing the games. I love doing baseball tonight. I love covering baseball, but there's no substitute for being at the ballpark. I can't wait to get back. I just need someone to give me the go-ahead.
Thanks, Tim.
All right, and don't wake anybody up there at the Atlanta airport. Let them sleep, okay?
Too late. They're all looking at me like, who's the annoying baseball guy?
All right, Buster. See you soon.
See you then.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Buster did a rapid-fire interview with Bryce Harper. Here's what he had to say.
So you're a big fan of the Golden Knights. On a scale of 1 to 10, what kind of game you got skating and what kind of game you got puck handling?
Skating, maybe a 3.5, and then puck handling, maybe a 1.
What's different about the Phillies in 2021?
I think just our, camaraderie, just the way we play together and just the way we go about it.
The last 2 years, you've had a baby boy and a baby girl. How has that shaped you?
Oh man, it's so much fun. I love it. I love being a dad. There's a lot of things that come with being a dad, and I enjoy it. They make me smile. They make me laugh, and it's just a lot of fun.
What reaction do you get when he comes through the door?
Oh, when my little man said daddy for the first time and ran up to me and, grabbed me, and that just the emotion and just the feeling that I felt, there was nothing greater.
Where do you come up with the inspiration for the Philly Fanatic gear? And what reaction have you gotten from the Fanatic?
Yeah, Fanatic usually loves it. Every year, on opening day, I've been doing it. I'll probably keep doing it for the next couple of years as well. But just inspiration from, my team at Under Armour and anybody that I'm working with, through the process.
What's your favorite piece of Fanatic equipment you've worn?
Man, last year's was pretty cool. Last year's was cool. Actually, a lady named Diamond Duchess came up with that one and helped me out doing that. She's up in Michigan. She does a great job. She does a lot of jean jackets and jackets for the wives and things like that. So she gave me pretty good inspiration on last year's one, and I really liked it.
You're the favorite player of Freddie Freeman's son, Charlie. What do you think about that?
Charlie's a stud. I love that little kid, man. He's always smiling and always having fun. Always has a bat in his hand. But he's got a great dad, and he's a great person. And I just wish him all the best.
It's a small sample size, but how does the baseball of 2021 seem to be traveling to you?
I don't know. I haven't really squared one up this year yet. So hopefully, I can square one up and let you know.
Last one. You grilled turkey at Thanksgiving last year. How did that turn out?
I smoked it on my Traeger. It was really good, you know, so hopefully I can do a ham next year or something like that for Christmas, or, you know, just really excited to, you know, keep cooking on that. I did some ribs last week too, and they were pretty good. So I love smoking, you know, stuff on that.
Perfect. Bryce, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Bleacher Tweets.
All right, Timmy. Bleacher Tweets on a fine Monday. First up, we have our pal, Aaron at AA Ron San Diego. He writes in, "My Padres threw a no-no. We always hear about catchers who have caught multiple, but we hear so little about pitching coaches. I have to believe Larry had a lot to do with this one. Are there any coaches that are known for many no-hitters?"
That is a great question, and I've never actually looked up who was in charge of the most no-hitters as a pitching coach. I mean, Ron Paranowski was one of the best pitching coaches we've ever seen, but even he was the pitching coach for only two no-hitters, one by Fernando Valenzuela, one by Kevin Gross. So that is a great question. I know a whole lot more about catchers catching no-hitters rather than pitching coaches presiding over them. Victor Caratini, by the way, has caught the last two no-hitters, but he did them with different teams, Alec Mills and now Joe Musgrove, and no one's ever caught consecutive no-hitters in the big leagues with different teams. And also keep in mind, Tony Pena is caught the most games in major league history, 1950, without ever catching a no-hitter. So I don't know much about pitching coaches and no-hitters. I'm going to have to examine that today once I have a little more time.
Interesting stuff. Next up, we have Frank at Cinegrades 2. He writes in, "With Cedric Mullins abandoning switch hitting in favor of his better side, do you see more hitters following? I look at Aaron Hicks, who's hitting much better from the right. Why not just take your chances from your better side?"
Yeah, that's a great question. Aaron Hicks gave up switch hitting a few years ago, very briefly, because it just wasn't working from both sides. Lance Berkman, who's one of the great switch hitters ever, told me after he retired, "If I could do it all over again, I wouldn't be a switch hitter because I was so much better from the left side and I got so few reps from the right side that I would have been better off just being a left-handed hitter." The problem is, Taylor, when you are a switch hitter, it's so difficult to not be a switch hitter in the middle of your career. Meaning, if you haven't seen that curveball coming at you for your entire career and now suddenly you do, that's an enormous adjustment. But JT Snow made that adjustment and he went from a switch hitter to exclusively a left-handed hitter. And one of the first left-handers he faced was Randy Johnson, but he got through that. So the lesson is it's really hard to hit from both one side of the plate. When you try to do it from two sides of the plate, it makes it even harder, which, again, switch hitting is a very difficult skill. And I wouldn't be surprised if more hitters say, look, it's not working from both sides. But to repeat, it's hard to make that adjustment in the middle of your career.
That makes sense. Next up, we have Jared Sova at Yay Pizza. He writes in, "Could you tell us exactly what a simulated game is? Does it include live batters?"
Yes, a simulated game normally happens in spring training. It's happened on off days where the team sends guys from your team to go up and take an at bat against the pitcher. So he feels like he's really facing a batter and there are infielders and outfielders behind him. And then he routinely has, you know, the pitcher who's doing the sim game will pitch an inning and then he'll go sit on the bench for say 8 to 10 minutes to simulate what it's like to take a rest and then come out and pitch another inning. Famously, or at least famously for me, when I covered the Rangers in 1984, Doug Rader was the manager and Charlie Huff was coming back from an injury. So he threw a sim game at Arlington Stadium and Doug Rader, the mischievous manager of the Rangers, grabbed the writers and told us, "You guys are going to bat in the simulated game against Charlie Huff." And I said, "I'm not hitting against anyone, especially Charlie Huff." And Doug Rader literally picked me up. He weighed 200 more pounds than I did, and place me in the batter's box. So I actually hit in a simulated game against Charlie Huff because they just needed hitters in there. It didn't matter whether the hitter was a sports writer or a player. So I've actually taken part in a simulated game, and I don't even need to add this. I had zero chance of getting a hit off of Charlie Huff, who was throwing the damnedest knuckleball that I've ever seen. I know that. So it was a great experience for me to actually face Charlie Huff in a simulated game.
Oh, that's hilarious. Good stuff. Another notch on your resume there. Let's go to Corey Rukert at CoreyR_12. He writes in, what are the chances we get to see Ohtani in the home run derby?
Well, we have to pray for that because he has tremendous power. The All-Star game is going to be in Colorado, where the ball just travels like you can't believe. But my guess is the Angels are not going to allow a pitcher slash hitter to take place in the home run derby. And I would not dispute the Angels doing that. That would be my recommendation also. But if we really cared about entertainment value, Ohtani has to be in the home run derby. But I can tell you that's not going to happen.
We'll keep our fingers crossed. And last one for today, Matthew Hawk at mhawk13. He writes in requesting a little love for the Brewers pitching on the podcast. He roped in a tweet, and I had to do my own mental math here, and this is my own stat that I've produced. Brewers starting pitching over the last four games, 28 innings pitched, one earned run, and 29 strikeouts. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's really good. And Matthew's right about this. Corbin Burnes has got great stuff. He was in the Cy Young, you know, race for most of last year. Brandon Woodruff has great stuff. And I'm not sure everyone in the world recognizes how good those two guys are. And the rest of that staff isn't bad either. That's why the Brewers have a chance to make the playoffs and win that division, because their starting pitching is better than people think. And it's off to, in for the most part, a very good start.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets, hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And big thanks to Tim for, again, filling in on a baggage claim Monday.
Well, thank you, Taylor. Thanks for walking me through this, including mostly the technology. And thanks for Buster for getting up early and waking up everyone in the Atlanta airport.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.